Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barbon, and with me is Brad Pilon. And today we're going to talk about something that you probably, I mean, people in the supplement industry would recognize this, but anyone who's ever purchased a supplement and doesn't know anything about the industry is probably going to be pretty shocked to find out that this is one of the ways supplements get put together, and it's based on the packaging. I've been involved in this, and Brad's for sure have been involved in this situation where when we're developing a new product, we actually work backwards from the packaging. So the dose that we're going to have in the product, the ingredients in the product, get determined at least to some degree, and in some cases to a large degree, just based on how they fit in the package. The package being either the size of the capsule, the size of the bottle, if the bottle has to be in a box, all that stuff. So, I mean, it does kind of it's crazy when you think about it that you know, you're going to be putting this thing in your body and hoping that it does something, and there's some kind of claim, you know, that the manufacturer's making saying it, you know, this will do X or Y if you take it on a regular basis. And at some point, you know, we were sitting in a marketing room thinking, well, the right dose or the dose we should have is, you know, whatever it is. But because of the packaging, we have to cut that in half and then just try to explain our way out of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not that much different from any other industry. The key here is that the packaging is your last line of defense between you and the customer. It's what the customer sees when they're holding your product in their hand, determining, you know, am I going to buy this or not. So, and the packaging is the thing that holds your claims, right? So not only does the product have to fit into the packaging, whether it's the pill, the powder, the, you know, whatever it takes to make it novel, you know, or different in the industry, but it's the at outer packaging, the bottle or the box or the bottle in the box, that, I mean, that's where everything comes from. It's a claim-based industry. You cannot sell a supplement without claims. It does not work. In fact, I've even been involved in trying to do it, and it was a miserable failure. Just like any other industry, it is claims that drive the sale of supplements, right? So the packaging not only has to fit the claim, in terms of, you know, it has to have the right look for the claim, but everything has to be right. So, if, you know.
Well, the claim also has to fit on the packaging.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and vice versa. I mean, nothing can be out of place when you're at that final stage of making a purchase. The supplement all has to make sense, right? So if you have hardcore drug-like claims on your product, that packaging better be hardcore and drug-like. Or you know, on another vein, you can't have really toned down for house mums type product and then have the thing in, like, you know, a pseudo vial that you, you know, squirt sublingually. It doesn't make sense. Everything has to match together. And I don't think people just realize how important packaging is to the entire supplement story.
Yeah, the presentation of the product changes the customer's view of the potency of the product, if it's for them or not. You know, you wouldn't make a product for muscle building in sort of toned down light blues and pink colors for guys. I mean, right off, I'm sure that just doesn't sound right at all. You know, if you go look at that, it's always in the darker colors. There's going to be silvers, blacks, reds, purples, like really dark stuff. And that's,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's what's associated with sort of performance. It's kind of like whatever color you'd produce like a hot rod in, that's kind of, you know, that's sort of what you would do for
your sports team, you know, that sort of
teams.
Thing.
Yeah.
And the people who really do the awesome work and, you know, I'd say the keep ahead of the Joneses work is the actual packaging companies that we work with. I mean, they do phenomenal work to make sure that, you know, everything looks fantastic. I mean, you take a company that's phenomenal packaging, Gillette, right, and your mock 13 razors or whatever is out now, right? I mean, the packaging is mind-blowing, right? Take a look at that packaging, then go to your GNC and look at what's on the shelves there. A lot of similarities. I mean, they've really got stepped up their game. The days of the, you know, Mega Muscle 5000 with a picture of some jack dude flexing on it on some crappy paper label are long gone. These things are embossed. They're you know, UV coated, ultra high gloss, or, you know, sometimes they're matte to stand out. They're
mirror holographic labels.
Absolutely. I mean, they've and people kind of laugh at that as a waste of money, but it is a difference between a sale and not a sale. I mean, I've done enough packaging design. In fact, that's primarily what I do now, when I do kind of work back in the industry, is packaging design, to know that it's still a vital, vital part. I would go as far to say, to the initial sale, at least as important or possibly even more important than the actual formulation of the product.
Yeah, I'd say at the very least, the packaging and the presentation of the product is 50-50 with what's in it.
Yep.
And what's in it is only relevant because of the claim that gets you.
Exactly. And the claim is only relevant if it's on the package and in the on the package in the right way. Yeah. So, it really is a claim-based industry. You would not be selling... creatine sales would not exist if somewhere on a label or box for creatine it didn't say build muscle, improve strength, or helps to build muscle and helps to increase strength.
Yeah, and see, when we're in marketing, we're in the marketing room where we're in product development mode, it's product. The word is a product. Like, those companies don't sell ingredients. They sell a product.
So absolutely.
But the product is the sum total of its claims, its packaging presentation, and the ingredients and even the number of doses. It's funny when people are on our blogs and, you know, in communication, the forum or whatever, talking about, you know, a certain ingredient at a certain dose. And I'm like, oh, that's not how that works. It's, you know, you're thinking of a dose and an ingredient that came from a product that was designed to be taken a certain number of times per day because that's what fit with their packaging. Like, that's all that goes into it. It's not like a pharmaceutical in a clinical trial where they figure out that, you know, a particular drug needs to be taken a specific time of day, you know, because of your physiology. It's not like that. In supplements, that might be a small part of it, but a lot of it has to do with, you know, where is the market right now for once a day products versus twice a day products. Like, that's one of the things we come up with from a marketing standpoint. It's like, well, we right off the bat, we decide we only want customers to take this once a day because it's convenient. That's irrelevant. So that doesn't necessarily mean, the product that we're trying to make has any clinical research saying it can be dosed once a day. We're just deciding we want something at once a day. And that's from there, we build the product out that way and try to fit as best we can what we can do with it.
Right. Now, sometimes you are limited based on if you're basing your claims on some form of clinical or published research, you have to be very careful that you match that published research. I can remember, I believe it was... I think it was ZMA, where the majority of ZMA was found in sort of a testosterone boosting products on the market. And I think most of them were like taken pre-workout, but then I think when actually kind of called a task on it, you realize that online paper by Brilla was actually a nighttime dose. I think I'm getting this story right. And so everybody had to change their dosing to match the paper. So occasionally you are hindered by the research, which is actually, it's always horrible when that happens. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. For the most part, I mean, when you look at what your competitor is doing or what the marketplace wants, is, you know, do you want a 30-day supply? Or, you know, can you get away with 15? Or if it's a 30-day supply, well, crap, if it's a 30-day supply, if we can get this in the two pills, the 60 count, which is what the buyers for the companies like to see on the shelves, you know, but if it's not at the 90 count, that's a bit expensive. So, you know, it all comes down to so many factors at play. When you do let's say you're doing a run of protein powder and, you know, you're in discussions and you get quoted in your 50,000 unit run, right? Well, let's say your 50,000 unit run was supposed to be at, you know, your typical 2 kilo, what would that be in pounds? Sorry, your 2 pound, 1 kilo.
2 pound, 1 kilo, yeah.
Your 2 pound,
yeah,
tub. And then your marketing guys come back and they're like, well, we want, you know, 1 pound tubs. It actually suits our product better. Well, the only problem is you got price quoted on a 50, you know, basically a 50,000 kilo run. Now it's going to be a 25,000 kilo run. Your run volume is now halved. Therefore, your price is going to go up. Therefore, your costing may not work. So all these things come into play long before it's just sort of what looks best on the shelf. And then that comes back into play, right? We're nothing worse than having a super small product and a super small bottle because your claims are super small. You don't have as much advertising space. And that's when you get into trying to figure out ways to put a super small bottle into a fairly big-sized box so that you have some space to make some claims.
Which is why if you go into a store and you look, you'll see a lot of products are the bottles in a box, and the box takes up way more space than the bottle. Actually, when you open up the box, you may find that 3/4 of the box is empty, and then there's some sort of scaffolding or bracket in there where the bottle fits in the box. And that's just so the box takes up more space on the shelf, so there can be a claim that you can read standing a certain number of feet away from the shelf. Like the last supplement line I was helped develop, we did that. We kind of stood there and stood away from the shelf until when we were looking at competitive products before we came up with our labels, and we tried to decide how far away from the shelf do you want to be able to see the claim. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of how we – one of the ways we designed some of the labels we came up with was just like how – because we knew this exactly would be the shelf it's going to sit on, and those are the products it'll sit next to. So we wanted to stand out next to those ones. And an interesting thing you said before about the capsule count, that changes based on the place you're selling to, right? The retailer. Like for instance, a Walmart might want a particular capsule count. Not so much because of the capsule count, but because of the price point. I remember $20 being like a golden number, and that we had to somehow produce units that came in right around $20 for Walmart. So the capsule count had to go way down. So we ended up with like a 15-day supply but Walmart doesn't want, at the time anyways, from the product we were making, didn't want a $40 product the way GNC could support it. So we would just take the same product, cut the dose or the number of capsules in half, and now it's $20, the price point at Walmart, even though it's only half a month worth.
No, absolutely. Those things come into play. Also, people don't realize this, is that the reason you want a sort of a box if you have a small product is because the footprint on the shelf, the space it takes up, speaks a lot to what it is and what it does. You have to have the right footprint for what you're trying to portray your product as being. You have to fit the consumer's ideals and the consumer's expectations, right? So one of my rules for marketing a product is that the rule of plus one. That is, you want to look what's on the market, and you want to be one step better, plus one. Because the consumer gets it. They recognize your product as being part of a category, right? And then they recognize it as having one good advantage over the competitors. If you go plus two, plus three, even plus four, there's so many mixed messages on the product, the consumer now doesn't know what they're buying. So the idea of the kitchen sink product, the one drink that can be pre-workout and post-workout and pre-bedtime, that's a protein, a testosterone booster, and a creatine. I mean, people constantly try to do this, and it typically fails, right? Or something too smart. You have a kid's product with vitamin D, DHA, then four or five other ingredients, right, that make – so you get the super product, which on paper is fantastic. But to the consumer, it's just confusing. You know, what is it? So you always have to be plus one, and that benefit, that plus one, has to be clearly visible on your packaging. But your packaging has to kind of match what everybody else is doing, just be a little bit better. Otherwise, you're going to confuse the consumer. They're not going to recognize your product. And then you're not making a sale.
And that's ironic because, I don't know if the word's ironic, what it is, but that it could be true. Like the product could actually do all five of those things better than any other product, but the customer can't conceptualize that one thing can be all things. So they're going to intuitively you're going to think that. Like, you know, if you're listening right now, imagine a product that says it's better than the next five best products in each individual category. Like you're probably going to think, just come on. You're telling me those other five category leaders that all they do is specialize in each one of those categories. How can they be second to a product that says it's best at all five? Like it sort of just doesn't make intuitively. Just we're used to a marketplace where there's one thing does one, you know, one product does one thing, the next product is best at something else. And it's easier to fit psychologically into our life that way. It's kind of like...
What if toothpaste and deodorant was the same thing? Right? Like it wouldn't make sense. Yeah. If you designed a paste and you're like, this thing is so awesome because you could brush your teeth with it and then you can also use it for deodorant. It would confuse...
Even though those things do exist. Like actually toothpaste is a good analogy. There's a couple of ingredients in toothpaste that also go into laundry detergent and stuff that can clean your carpet and clean your dishes. And I think, you know, I remember hearing I was in a marketing lecture where that was the case. And the company who had the patent on the particular substance was like, this will be great. We can market that this can clean everything. but people couldn't wrap their heads around the fact that you could brush your teeth with the same thing you could clean your clothes with. And it would have been a cost savings too, right? Because you just buy one tub of this stuff and it's your all-purpose house and personal cleaner. And, you know, you could wash your hair with it. And people were like, no, that doesn't work. You can't wash your clothes with the same thing you wash your hair with. And so the company was like, all right, well, I guess they just don't want that. So they just split it up, split the same ingredient into various products.
Yeah, makes sense.
Which is good for that company because they can increase the price on all of them.
Yep.
Absolutely. So the customer, and you know what? I don't know. Maybe there's peace of mind in that, thinking that you've got the right, I don't know, maybe that bleeds into human nature as how people categorize other people in their life. Like, you can't have one person that's the best at everything, even if they actually are. You may not believe that.
Right. Like, this is my buddy. He's athletic. This is a smart guy. This is a funny guy. You know, can't all be the same guy.
Right. So maybe people think the same thing with clearly, because it just never works when you try to put it all in one. Like, even in industries like maybe the car industry, where you would think maybe a BMW or a Mercedes is just that much better than everything else, I'm sure you can rationalize in your head why a different brand is still better than them at something else. You know, like Mercedes exactly. is classy, but Honda is more reliable, and, you know, Chevy trucks are tougher, or like, you can still, every one of them has a reason, right? Otherwise it starts to not make sense why they even exist.
Totally agree. But I think the main thing that I just wish people understand is just how much thought goes into the packaging of a supplement. Right? It's not, I mean, when you look at it and you're like, that is hideous. You know, it's hideous on purpose. One of my favorite things to hate is when you design packaging and, you know, the owner of the company or the marketing manager, you know, he'll bring in a bunch of people from call center and then a couple people from sales and a couple people from accounting and ask them what they think of it. And I wish that he'd get to understand that what they think of it doesn't matter at all. Whether it's pretty or not, whether the colors clash or not, whether the fonts are great or not, the point of that product is to sell, and it's an emotional sell. It's the right words in the right place, in the right colors, at the right time, in the right order that will sell that product. So whether or not it's pretty or you know, the girl down from accounting thinks the colors work really well is completely irrelevant to the sale. Mm-hmm. It's understanding, specifically for sports supplements, typically is emotional need for building muscle and losing fat. And then explaining that properly in a plus one type scenario where you're still explaining, you know, look, I am a protein shake, so I am 98% whey protein, I mix instantly, I taste phenomenal, and then bang, you're plus one, right? And that's what matters. So I always find it funny when, you know, especially when I'm doing consulting work, is when people pull in the random, you know, the random my wife's friend who's really good at this kind of stuff to then critique the label, you know, or the box. And so they're going, like, the point of this isn't to be the most beautiful thing ever put on a shelf.
To be the one that sells the best.
Exactly. Yeah. So I always find that interesting. And I also like watching people explain a product. And you know you've done a fantastic job with your packaging when you go into GNC and you pretend like you're looking around, and then you stop at the packaging design, you ask the guy behind the counter, you're like, what's this all about? If he can, without even looking at it, verbatim tell you about the product, but really all he's doing is reading the label to you off of memory, you made a fantastic label. Mm-hmm. Because all your buzzwords were there in a way that was memorable, right? So he could just rhyme it off, you know, oh, it's got waxy maize in it, and the creatine is a special methyl ester version, and then I had this, it's got this crazy germanium oil thing in it, it's like the next ephedra. You know, if he can say all these things, if that's what it says on your label, then you've done your job. You know, the product is selling itself, and then the person that's already sold itself to is now selling it to 10 other people, and then it keeps going on and on. So it's all about the packaging. I would put the packaging up there as, yeah, like I said before, the most important part of this whole deal.
Totally. And another interesting point, and we made this mistake, was making a package that looks good in the boardroom but not on the shelf.
Yeah, always got to test it on the shelf.
We've completely made that mistake before, where we were kind of sitting in just a corporate boardroom and we're like, hey, that looks good. And we never thought once at what's the – because it's a rainbow in the store of packages and colors and labels and just, I mean, really advanced-looking, well-done labeling. And when you have a look at the store as to where your product will actually be, one of the packages we came up with, you couldn't read any of the words. Like, you could read them back in our boardroom where we built it, but you, in the store with the lighting, and we're talking thousands and thousands of locations this product's going to be shipped to. When it sits on the shelf, it just disappears. It turns into like almost like a shadow product. And that's, I was like, oh man, we blew it like badly on that one. And then, you know, that label had to be retooled. And the ironic thing was the label preceding that label looked great on shelf and kind of looked sort of mundane in the boardroom. And then, I don't know, I guess we just got caught up forgetting that it's, you don't sell these things out of a boardroom. And then so we switched and created a label that looked great in the boardroom and brutal on the shelf.
Absolutely. I've been kind of questioned on more than one occasion for, you know, being at a Shoppers Drug Mart, basically at any stores, putting mocks on the shelf to see how it looks. And I learned my lesson, actually. Everybody's using a rainbow foil now. So when you go into GNC and you see how all these labels look metallic, right? Well, they can bounce light around. And so if you're doing like a really cool looking, you know, gray on black matte kind of label, the light reflecting off other people's products can make your label difficult to read. Right. So yeah, same story. You have to literally, if you don't have a mocked up shelf in your boardroom, you should. But if you don't have access to that, get your mock up, walk in the store, put it on a shelf where you think it's going to be, snap some pictures, walk by it. Stand there, watch other people walk by. You know, the best thing that could possibly happen is for a customer to actually pick it up. That'd be novel. But it has to be tested that way because it's that's where you're going to make your sale. You know, all that work that you do, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per page advertising in magazines and then you know, your billboards and your flyers and your BOGO deals, et cetera, is just to get the customer in the store. And, man, you spend all that money and they get to your product and are just absolutely wowed by the product to your left. Well, you spent $600,000 promoting your competitor's product.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
and that's where you lose out massively. It's packaging is that important, and especially in the health industry because it's all claims. If claims were made illegal tomorrow, the health industry would just die a very quick death. Right, because you need the, you know, up to 25 pounds fat loss claim. Like you can't just say lose some fat, right? The claims have to be blunt in your face and worded right. And if you do that, lose 25 pounds of fat in the wrong font, you know, if it's a little too hardcore looking and you're aiming it at mums, or if it's a little too soft and you're aiming at bodybuilders, product's done.
Yeah, because there's probably one right next to it that has a slightly nicer looking font.
Yep, and that matched the message.
This isn't easy stuff. This is stressful.
Oh, well, the other thing I think people should be aware of, and it's like a rule of mine, this one's like an ironclad rule, is that every single label, the first run, there will be a mistake. Like, it's unavoidable. It's somewhere on that label is a mistake you made. Because you typically, you know, you're looking at these things so often when you're designing them or the box or whatever, there's going to be a mistake on there. And that's something people need to be aware of, too, is that, you know, these labels, these things, you know, there are mistakes on them. I can remember, especially in the bodybuilding industry, picking up things and just being like, this is almost gibberish. There's so many mistakes on it. It's like someone sort of typed it out really quickly while half drunk waiting to get into the bar and then ship it off to be printed. That's how bad it was. But in anywhere, there's going to be a mistake, even though everybody puts this amount of work into it. And that's why it's so stressful.
No, yeah. I don't even like looking at labels I've come up with just because I know exactly where the mistakes are. But you only find out afterwards. Like, I can't even think of a label I know of that even after being edited still doesn't have at least some, but see, cause there's two kinds of mistakes. There's the straight up grammatical, you just spell something wrong. And then there's the legal compliance mistakes where it's like technically not quite 100% to like no label's ever 100% legally compliant. It's just degrees of risk.
Yes.
So you know, once your label goes through a legal review, either with a consultant or with your in-house legal people or your in-house people, they basically kind of give you a rating. They're like, that's low risk, medium risk, high risk. And risk meaning how hard are you pushing up against the law, the regulation on what you can and can't get away with saying. And then you just, you know, you kind of have to take a landscape of what the other products are saying. And if you go like super low risk, your product's going to seem like not impactful.
Well, it doesn't work. I mean, if you're the person that's there saying, like, this is a simple, well, it's like eat, stop, eat, right? If you're out there saying, hey, this is a simple, easy, effective way to lose weight, And everybody else is saying, you know, what's the Aceaberry one I sent you? I lost 47 pounds in 7 days.
Yeah, something absurd.
How do you compete with that, right? Because that claim, the more absurd your competitors go, the more insignificant your claim is, no matter how true it is, right? So it's a very balanced game of keeping up with the Joneses while making sure everything you say is defensible in a court of law.
Yeah, and then trying to match to some degree the landscape of both the packaging and the claims so that you don't fade away on the shelf, but yours seems viable, competitive. It seems like a reasonable option. Because if there's 10 competing products on the shelf and 9 of them are really pushing the limits with claims and you're the only one who's 100% like low risk, people are going to look right past yours because they're like, well, how come these other 9 all say that you can lose 20 pounds in a month and yours says you can lose 4? Even though yours might be completely legally compliant and all the other ones are like over the edge, you're gonna drown. Like, you're not going to be around long enough to even see if they ever get legal action taken against them because you're not going to be selling and they will be.
Exactly. Yeah, and that hurts. That's a lot, right? Like, it's just a lesson there too, and just in sort of basic marketing, et cetera. Is it? Yeah, that's the kind of thing that you have to account for. Is if you're not making the right claims, if you're not at least as aggressive as your competitors, you may as well not even bother. You're wasting your time. You're wasting, you know, the buyer's time. You're wasting the time of the people putting this product on the shelf because you have to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. And some sort of equilibrium is hit. And so, you know, you might be thinking, well, isn't there a law and isn't everyone just following the law? But that's, again, it's a risk. It's a risk thing. A lot of people push it past what, like, if every label was designed completely 100% legally compliant, every label would look identical with the exact same claim, which clearly doesn't happen. So everyone's pushing it over the line to some degree.
Unless you have some sort of novel ingredient that you have exclusivity on that no one else can use.
In which case you would have that chunk of the market cornered anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people wouldn't be messing you regardless. Yeah. But yeah, it's just unbelievable how much work and detail goes into that part. And I find it interesting because I occasionally get the phone calls from people who have, like, you know, Brad, I've got this great new ingredient. I'm going to launch a supplement company. And I'm like, wow. Based off of your great new ingredient, like, but what's it going to look like? What's the niche? What's the market, et cetera? And it gets down to, if you don't have your packaging planned out properly, don't bother. I'd almost do the packaging first. Now, if I could go back and do some things differently,
I think you could launch a product. You could break into the marketplace as a newbie if you had a novel way of packaging something way faster than if you had a novel ingredient.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And in terms of even then, it's your ability to impress, for people who aren't involved in sort of packaged goods, et cetera, when you go to a big company to sell your product for you, you have to meet with the buyer. And the buyer is the person who's responsible for that specific area of that store. So let's say the vitamin and mineral section. And that's the person, you know, she or he decides whether your product gets in or gets out. So they have about 10 feet, 12 feet, 3 feet, whatever the case may be, of shelf space that they are the supreme emperor over. And that's the person you have to convince to take one of the existing products off the shelf and replace it with your product. So if they were already doing really well and making a profit and everybody kind of likes in the company, you know, they are in a very low-risk frame of mind. You have to impress them to get them to even consider putting your product on the shelf. Are you going to do that with a brand-new fancy ingredient that says risk all over it? Probably not, right? They'll say who else is selling this product? And if you're like, no one yet, you're going to be first? Well, alarm bells. They're not going near you. But if you go in with packaging that is mind-blowing, that is unique and novel, that is plus one all over the place, you stand a pretty good chance of getting in there.
Mm-hmm. And plus one being the same basic ingredients as everybody else, just with one other tweak to it.
Yep. You know, or it can be a series of tweaks that add up to sort of one concept, but just don't go past that concept. And then your packaging, something about it has to be better, right? Or displayed better, et cetera. So,
yeah. New products are tough, man. I mean, it's...
Oh, no, yeah. Especially a new brand altogether. You know, so you have no track record. You have no, you know, sales velocity info. You're saying, I just got a good idea, you know, some good ingredients and some good packaging. Whew, you better be lucky if you're going to get it in.
Yeah, lots of people have good ideas. It's building a product in a viable brand that's the hard part.
Absolutely. That's absolutely. And it's probably one of the main problems with being an entrepreneur is, I mean, it's one of the ways I used to look at it was that there's three stages of getting something out there and done, right? You ideate, then you implement, then you operationalize. And just about every great wannabe entrepreneur out there is great the ideate part, right? Thinking up their awesome idea. And then of that group, like maybe 10% is actually able to implement it, which just means basically make it at least once or make the phone calls necessary to get it going. And then of that 10%, maybe like 1% of them is actually able to operationalize, which is turn it into something that you could actually produce. My favorite one's always the guy with the great, going back to the guy with the great ingredients. And then, you know, they come back with a pricing structure and you're going like, no, I mean, like, no, there's no store out there that's going to take a 5% profit margin off of your product because your product is awesome, right? That's never happening, right? It's too expensive.
Oh yeah, your product has to fit into the current pricing structures and how much money the retailer gets and the distributor and all that stuff. So you're pretty fixed. That's why it can't just be one ingredient. The package, the product, how it's presented, all of it goes into whether or not the thing has even a remote shot.
Yeah, yeah. But and if I were going to spend my money on any part of that, it would be the packaging.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If people walk in and your thing just jumps off the shelf, like it's just completely different, everyone's going to turn and look. It's like that person that walks into a party completely dressed, like peacocking, dressed so different than everybody else that everyone turns and looks and says, who is that person? Like, what are they all about? That's what you want. You want your product
to be... With the caveat that you also look like you're supposed to be there. It's that the fine mix, right?
Yeah, yeah. Not like an outcast, but I'm ahead of the curve here.
You one-upped all your buddies, but you one-up them, right?
Like, yeah, just one. Sort of thing. So I guess what's bringing this all together? What is it? Where are we at with this? I guess
let's bring this all the way back to Adonis.
Mm-hmm.
Looks matter, right? Like it doesn't matter if you're brilliant or funny, etc. If you don't have the right package, you know, if it hasn't been packaged up the right way, and don't get all childish and laugh at the fact that I said package. But you know, if you were not put together properly, it really doesn't matter. And no matter how bad of a commentary that is on the world, it's true.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, it's awesome when we hear the stories about the guy who's a multimillionaire who spends his day wearing track pants. But if you're going to a job interview, track pants aren't the best idea. You know, like bottom line, packaging matters. The packaging is where you put your claims. Right, and since we can't actually write claims on ourselves, you know, it's sort of an implied claim.
Yep.
I think that's where I want to take it.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I don't know where else to go with that. I guess all I'll add to that is when speaking specifically about supplements and even, health foods and functional foods nowadays, the product that's presented to you is only partly the ingredients themselves and to at least an equal part, if not a larger part, the story and the mystique around the package and how it's presented to you. So it's
yeah, story mystique is actually a great way.
It's never just the ingredient and what it can do. It's how the whole thing comes together and how the company's hoping you're going to adopt it into your lifestyle. Sort of like how Apple's, dominated with their computers. Like Macs are a representation of whether or not you have class when it comes to having a computer.
It's a great example. I'm sure the computer people out there would agree that a lot of that has to do with packaging an image, right?
Like, that's what I'm saying. A Mac is an image. Like you have a Mac, and that's like when you walk into a room and you look over and see a Mac, it looks nice. Whereas if you see a random other brand, it's just this clunky machine. But a Mac is like it's classy. It's actually it's kind of like how you select furniture because you like the way it looks. Mm-hmm. Same with a Mac. It's something sitting in your house. You want it to look nice.
Exactly. Yep. No, very good point.
All right. Well, I think we're done for this one.
Yeah, it's a good ramble. As kind of a follow-up to this one, next time you're in, it actually doesn't matter whether it's, a supplement shop or just your local grocery store, go to the vitamin mineral section. Just take a look, and you'll really start to realize, like, wow, like that the packaging does always fit the message on the good ones and on the bad ones, not so much. And, looking at the font, it doesn't even have to be supplements. Go down to the cookie aisle, which is a fantastic aisle. And look at the different fonts and messages used on just cookies, because they're just selling cookies, right? But it's the fonts and packaging that'll make you pick one up.
Mm-hmm.
dad's pirate cookies. Just saying. But yeah, good.
All right, so that's your homework. We need some feedback from you on the site once you've looked at the packaging and have an idea.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, perfect. So for Brad Pielon, I'm John Barbin, and that's your PhiLife podcast.